It's Wednesday, July 8th, 2009, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville. Produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C., this is your normal daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal's staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about our show at our website, stash.normal.org. And continue the education and conversation on our blog as well. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. The podcasting and blogging technology for the Normal Daily Audio Stash is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. For your professional web design needs, visit redaphid.com. Good day, Stashers, and welcome to the podcast. I just realized that on Pacific time out here, the clock just struck 04, 05, 06 p.m. on 07, 08, 09. Just something to think about. I want to give a shout out to the activists working in Minneapolis, Minnesota, trying to get a Normal chapter together there. So good work, you guys, and keep sending those emails in. I'll get you all together and we can put a chapter together, as well as the state of Maryland. If you're out there in the state of Maryland, send me an email at stash@normal.org and we'll start you a chapter. Also, huge thanks and big kudos to the chapters of Dallas-Fort Worth and Texas Normal for their work in helping an activist named Cliff start Waco Normal. Dallas-Fort Worth granted them $500 to get their incorporation taken care of through the state of Texas, and Texas Normal helped them out with all the paperwork. So, good work, you guys. This is how we got to do it. We've all got to band together and help each other at the local level. I've also been on the forums out in Australia, a place called ozstoners.com, battling some misperceptions and some, well, seems to be deep-seated hatred of Normal down under. It's very strange. I did find out that they do not like the word marijuana at all. It's something you'll find when you start reading the media from the UK or from Australia, is that they always refer to it as cannabis and they consider marijuana to be racist. The way I look at it is, number one, Normal's kind of stuck with our name, kind of like the NAACP or the United Negro College Fund. A little late to change the name now, and Norkel just doesn't sound as cool. And number two, when I'm talking about the plant, I'm talking about cannabis. But when I'm talking about the law, I'm talking about marijuana laws. Sometimes marijuana with an H. Because that's what's written into the statute. They are laws against marijuana. That's what the laws say. So being Normal, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, makes perfect sense to me. One of the big stories that's going around in the media today is the release of a new advertisement from the Marijuana Policy Project in California, calling for the passage of Tom Amiano's bill to legalize marijuana, pointing out how it could pay the salaries of teachers. Let's give that ad a listen real quick.
Sacramento says huge cuts to schools. Healthcare and police are inevitable due to California's budget crisis. Even our state parks could be closed. But the governor and legislature are ignoring millions of Californians who want to pay taxes. We're marijuana consumers. Instead of being treated like criminals for using a substance safer than alcohol, we want to pay our fair share. Taxes from California's marijuana industry could pay the salaries of 20,000 teachers. Isn't it time?
It's a great ad, and considering how the governor of the state has called for an open debate on the legalization of marijuana, you'd think it'd be something you'd be seeing on your local California TV stations. But as it turns out, stations in Los Angeles and San Francisco have refused to play the ad and not given any explanation as to why. Now, it will be appearing on some cable outlets, but hey, you know what? This is actually good news. We tend to get a whole lot more media play on the controversy over not playing the ad than if they had just played the ad in the first place. Already, I'm seeing it pop up in news stories on the Huffington Post and on MSNBC and other cable outlets. So, hey, if we're talking about it, we're winning. Now, coming up on today's Daily Audio Stash, we've got your hemp headlines, beginning with a look at a judge who has sentenced a South Dakota activist to not exercise his First Amendment rights because he got busted with pot. Then, I examine recent public remarks by Bill Maher, an advisory board member for Normal, that really got under my skin. We go across the Pacific Ocean to the state of Hawaii, where Governor Linda Lingle has vetoed a medical marijuana task force bill and given a lousy excuse for doing so. And in Reefer Madness, we take a look at a new prohibitionist from my neck of the woods, right here in Portland, Oregon, a retired locksmith by the name of John English, whose Reefer Madness screeds are appearing all over the internet. Normally today would be our cannabis science segment with Dr. Mitch Earlywine, but Dr. Mitch is still on vacation, so today I'm going to play for you an interview with Casper Leach, who's the host of the podcast Time for Hemp. We're doing a cross-promotional, so I'll be appearing on his show, and he's appearing on mine, so give that one a listen. In our Daily Toker Tunes, brought to you by MarijuanaMusicAwards.com, we bring you another winner from the American Marijuana Music Awards for Reggae Wednesday, Cifari with Peaceful Village. And yesterday's California Marijuana Report, which was held up by some technical difficulties, appears at the end of the show, featuring an interview with the father of California's Prop 215, Dennis Perrone, and his opinions on Eddie Lipp, medical marijuana, and the campaign to eradicate marijuana planting in California. All of this and more, including details on our Normal National Conference this September 24th through 26th in San Francisco, it's time for your Normal Daily Audio Stash.
Hello, I'm Paul Stanford from the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation, or THCF. Medical marijuana is legal in 13 states today, and THCF has clinics in 8 of those states. Our doctors help qualified patients obtain an authorization for medical marijuana in their state. Patients are eligible for medical marijuana with a history of either severe chronic pain and or nausea, cancer, AIDS or HIV, hepatitis, glaucoma, seizure disorders like epilepsy, chronic muscle spasms such as in multiple sclerosis or asthma, neurodegenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's, and gastrointestinal disorders like IBS or Crohn's disease. If you or someone you know has one of these conditions, our doctors will help you obtain a permit for medical marijuana. THCF Medical Clinics has offices in Washington State, Oregon, California, Colorado, Hawaii, Nevada, Montana, and now Michigan. Call 1-800-723-0188 or go to the web at hemp.org or 1-800-723-0188.
Now it's time to take a look at the latest stories about marijuana from news organizations across America and around the world in our Normal Daily Audio Stash, Hemp Headlines. South Dakota Normal's Bob Newland sentenced to shut up about ending marijuana prohibition. Remember learning about our founding fathers in school and how they put together our marvelous Constitution? Following its ratification, these wise men realized that there needed to be a charter that clearly enumerated the rights of the people, our Bill of Rights. Somehow, I missed that day in school when Madison added the marijuana exception to the first 10 amendments of the Constitution, but it certainly must be there, considering how cannabis consumers' rights are regularly trampled. Our First Amendment freedom of religion, the right to religious ganja sacrament, is ignored, even though other religions enjoy protection for ayahuasca and peyote. Our Second Amendment right to bear arms, enhanced penalties for drug law violations if in possession of even a legally owned and registered firearm. Our Fourth Amendment protection against unreasonable searches and seizures, cops breaking down your door with no-knock warrants. Our Fifth Amendment protection against self-incrimination, PTESs, and double jeopardy, state medical marijuana cases being retried by the feds, our Sixth Amendment right to confront witnesses, anonymous snitches in drug cases, our Seventh Amendment right to civil trials to recoup lost, stolen, or destroyed crops and equipment, Our Eighth Amendment protection against cruel and unusual punishment, like locking up paraplegic medical marijuana patients who then die in jail. Our Ninth Amendment right to grow and use plants. How can a constitution drafted on hemp paper not presume we have a right to grow hemp? And our Tenth Amendment states rights. Every medical marijuana state. When you think about it, only our right to be free from soldiers being quartered in our homes during peacetime, the Third Amendment, has been safe from the ravages of reefer madness in eviscerating our rights. But we still have our freedom of speech and freedom of assembly, and we can use those to assert our right to petition our government for a redress of grievances, right? Sadly, no. To illustrate, I bring you an email from past Stash guest Bob Newland of South Dakota Normal. Many of you know I pled to a felony count of possession of marijuana in May. Today, I was sentenced. In an hour-long sentencing hearing, Judge Delaney waxed reminiscent as he described his admiration for Muhammad Ali's stance against an illegal war, which cost him millions of dollars and his peak performing years, during which time he did not complain, nor did he leave the country that so abused him for his beliefs. Then, citing the fact that he, Judge Delaney, had to account for his actions to the hundreds of kids he sees in juvenile court, he sentenced me to a year in the Penn County Jail, with all suspended but 45 days. During the suspended part of the sentence, I will wear a bracelet that senses alcohol use and will be subject to arbitrary piss tests by a probation officer to detect illegal drug use. In addition, I may have no, quote, public role, end quote, in cannabis law reform advocacy during that year. For 40 years, I have watched as dozens of people I know and thousands I know of go through this same procedure. Now it is happening to me, and I feel the same frustration over the purposelessness of it all as I have felt for all those other people, many, many, many of whom were treated far more viciously than I. If Judge Delaney so admired Muhammad Ali, he should have noted that when Ali was convicted of draft evasion in 1967, he was sentenced to 5 years and $10,000, forbidden from fighting professionally in America, stripped of his heavyweight title and his passport, but remained free on appeal. However, the judge did not sentence Ali to have, quote, no public role, end quote, in the Nation of Islam or in protesting the Vietnam War. Instead, Judge Delaney just stripped from Newland four of the five freedoms guaranteed in the First Amendment: speech, assembly, press, you know, blogging, and petitioning the government for a redress of grievances. Why not sentence him to attend a specific church while you're at it? Actually, I should keep quiet about that, lest Bob get sentenced to a pseudo-religious 12-step program. Even worse is knowing that Bob is a leader in trying to get medical marijuana on the ballot in South Dakota. By sentencing him, the judge is essentially trying to take away the rights of all South Dakotans to decide whether or not the state should have medical marijuana. I just got a new flux capacitor for the DeLorean, so I'm headed back to 1789. Can someone give me an easy way to explain to our founding fathers how much we love their First Amendment, but in our time, a judge has to suspend it for people convicted of growing hemp? Bill Maher is, quote, disillusioned, end quote, with Normal. From bestofneworleans.com. Question. New Republic editor Leon Vesaltier said about you and Ann Coulter recently, quote, they share the assumption that the most extreme formulation of an idea is its truest one, end quote. Your retort? Bill Maher. My retort would be, he sounds like he's expressing one of the problems with the media, which is what I call fake fairness. Sometimes, the truth is all on one side. One of the problems with our media is that they don't really know what's up, so they always have to posit the idea that everything is a 50-50 situation. You'll see a cover story in Time or Newsweek on legalizing marijuana, and they'll give the pros and the cons. Well, you know what? Be honest with yourself. There really aren't any cons. It's one of the most benign drugs in the world. Pharmaceuticals and liquor kill hundreds of thousands of people a year. Marijuana doesn't kill anybody. This is, I think, the biggest cash crop in America. But of course, it's all going to drug dealers and illegals instead of the government. It's really a no-brainer issue, but it's not treated that way in the press. So I would say to this guy, to paraphrase Barry Goldwater, extremism in the defense of truth is no vice. Question. Are you still on the board of the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws? Bill Maher. You know, that's a good question. I haven't had much contact with them in recent years. I was a little disillusioned. I've always said one of the reasons there's been so little progress on the marijuana front is that what the movement needs is more than anything is some kick-ass take-no-prisoners Karl Rove-type lobbyist, you know? And that just never happens because it's all a bunch of stoners. You gotta get up for that 8 a.m. breakfast meeting with the congressman on Capitol Hill. G-Bill, thanks for your help. We've got normal chapter volunteers who drive an hour or two to get to their state capitals by 8 a.m. for those breakfast meetings with their representatives, senators, and assembly persons at the state level. We've got Keith Strop working in close contact with Representatives Barney Franks and Ron Paul's offices at the federal level. We've gotten the first marijuana legalization bills introduced in California and Massachusetts, and 13 medical marijuana states, and 13 decriminalization states, all from kick-ass take-no-prisoners lobbying. We've got activists who don't get paid a dime to collect signatures, write letters, and march in protests to show Americans that there aren't really any cons to marijuana legalization. You know, just a bunch of stoners. Every year I hear from regular cannabis consumers, you know, Bill, the ones who actually get busted for pot and don't have the celebrity connections and money to get out of it, who complain, how come we can't get Bill Maher or Woody Harrelson or Willie Nelson or Tommy Chong to do a commercial for Normal or appear at a rally or speak at a conference? And to your credit, Bill, you spoke at the 2002 Normal conference. Apparently, you don't want to associate with a bunch of stoners. So, if you're wondering why it's really a no-brainer issue, but it's not treated that way in the press, let me explain. If the highest profile political talk show host supporting marijuana law reform thinks reformers on his side of the issue are a bunch of stoners, why should they take the issue seriously? Sorry, man. I love your comedy and your politics, but I have to admit, I'm feeling a little disillusioned with you right now. For more on this, check the post at stash.normal.org, where Todd McCormick, a longtime marijuana activist and personal friend of Bill Maher, appears in the comments section to defend Bill Maher, and you'll get my reply to that as well. Hawaii Governor Lingle vetoes medical marijuana study bill. From the Office of the Governor, Honolulu, Hawaii. Governor Linda Lingle vetoed today four bills that are preempted by federal law or violate existing federal statutes. The governor issued her vetoes to ensure that federal officials recognize that the state of Hawaii respects the individual role of states and the federal government in setting legal policy for our citizens. SB 1058, relating to controlled substances, this bill attempts to circumvent provisions of federal controlled substances laws as enforced by the United States Drug Enforcement Administration. Governor Lingle said, quote, I am concerned that the legislature, in their efforts to address local concerns, may not have fully taken into account existing federal laws or requirements. The state of Hawaii must abide by federal statutes when they prevail or preempt state action, as is the case with this measure. End quote. Excuse me, Governor Lingle, but that is a huge steaming load of kukai-lio. And excuse my poor Hawaiian pronunciation. The bill, SB 1058, didn't direct Hawaii to violate any existing federal statutes. What you vetoed was a task force to study medical marijuana issues. To, quote, examine current state statutes, state administrative rules, and all county policies and procedures relating to the medical marijuana program. To examine all issues and obstacles that qualifying patients have encountered with the medical marijuana program. To examine all issues and obstacles that state and county law enforcement agencies have encountered with the medical marijuana program. to compare and contrast Hawaii's medical marijuana program with all other state medical marijuana programs, and to address other issues the task force deems appropriate, end quote. You can't seriously believe the Controlled Substances Act prevents a state government from examining things, can you?
Marijuana is an addictive drug which produces in its users insanity, criminality, and death.
Marijuana is the most violence-causing drug in the history of mankind.
If the hideous monster Frankenstein came face to face with the monster of marijuana, he would drop dead from fright.
John English, Reefer Madman. The Examiner family of online newspapers is now featuring the retired locksmith, and thus drug policy expert, John English, as a regular columnist. It seems his entire series of columns is dedicated to pushing reefer madness. In a column entitled, Marijuana Crosses the Placenta, John tortures the language he's named after with fine writing like this.
Effects on the fetus, though scientifically difficult to evaluate, for a variety of reasons, the detection of metabolites in meconium establishes fetal drug exposure. The effects on the babies after birth is obvious.
Judging from his various cut and paste from scientific articles I doubt he understands, I think his argument is that women who smoke a lot of pot while pregnant risk harming their babies, so we should lock them up. Wait till he sees the statistics on fetal alcohol syndrome. In Who Populates the Prison System, John claims to debunk the idea pushed by, quote, pro-drug advocates and their financial backers, Soros, Sperling, et al., end quote, that the prisons are filled with nonviolent marijuana possessors.
The massive numbers of people in prison for marijuana are or were smugglers and distributors. These skewed facts ignore that when a person actually is incarcerated for simple possession, invariably it's because they've cooperated and been allowed to plead to a lesser charge.
John doesn't understand, though, that a smuggler distributor of marijuana can be a pot possessor who made the mistake of keeping his two separate strains in two separate baggies, or keeps Ziploc sandwich baggies somewhere in his home, or owns a postal scale, or grew more than one plant, or keeps a legal firearm. He also doesn't realize that folks on parole or probation who get busted for possession technically go back to prison for their original crime, not the pot possession, so they don't show up in statistics as pot prisoners. But it is refreshing to see him admit that there are, quote, massive numbers of people in prison for marijuana, end quote, as he beats up his straw man. In Losing Our Youth to Depression, John explains that marijuana doesn't treat depression, it causes depression.
The marijuana user is in a constant state of depression, interspersed with, quote, short bursts of feeling almost normal again, end quote. The user, when he's reached out and achieved that high, he has a temporary reprieve from that constant marijuana-induced state of depression. But it returns as the high fades. That's the cause, the scenario. Users seek the non-depressed state they perceive as a high. They're wrong. It's the state they were in before. It's the absence of depression. Over and over, they're drawn into the fog of marijuana addiction, which has caused them to perceive it wrongly. The user has unknowingly only taken a step down a rung on the ladder of normalcy.
So, I'll bet that when John learns that the suicidal, homicidal Columbine shooters, Eric Harris and Dylan Klebold, and just about every high-profile school shooting you can name in the past 20 years, involved depressed teens who were prescribed SSRI antidepressants, he'll be eager to pump out a few columns about how we should be locking up people in possession of Paxil, Effexor, Celexa, Prozac, Zoloft, Luvox, Anafrinil, Lexapro, Wellbutrin, etc. In Addiction to Cannabis and Mental Disorders, John reveals the insidious evil of marijuana. The potheads are seducing our youth into their debauched lifestyle.
I guess we've been borrowing strategy from the gay agenda.
The most convincing reason why potheads must remain criminals, why marijuana must remain illegal, is their targeting of children. That behavior in and of itself reveals that they suffer from a deep psychological insufficiency, a need to draw children into becoming like them, whether it's a need to justify their own beliefs or some other motivation, it doesn't matter. They're damaging future generations and doing so intentionally.
You know who's targeting children, John? Pot dealers who aren't required to check IDs, a million of whom are teenagers themselves. You know who else targeted children? Alcohol and tobacco companies with their Budweiser frogs and Joe Camel. But since those drugs are legal, we were able to set strong advertising restrictions on those products, create effective anti-youth drinking and smoking educational campaigns, and reduced teen drinking and smoking to the lowest levels ever recorded. Finally, in What is Wrong with Smoking Marijuana for Medical Purposes, John cites a video of Nathan Edelman, he means Drug Policy Alliance's Ethan Nadelman, which is actually video of former Normal director Richard Cowan, taken way out of context to illustrate our alleged secret agenda of telling pot smokers to lie about how marijuana helps them medically so we can legalize all drugs, and naturally recruit the children into our debauched lifestyle.
When considering at this question, one must take into account two related issues. One, that the whole plan to make marijuana legal was published in High Times. They issued a call, compelling users to come forward, saying that pot helped their suffering. And there's another part, too, that a survey showed that medical marijuana cardholders had been smoking pot for an average of 17 years. That, in itself, brings the whole system under more suspicion. For what if marijuana does cause one to think they're medicine helps their condition when it is instead actually causing or contributing to it? Then there's two further questions that need to be asked. One, what weed is smoked without the particulate matter, tars, and over 400 chemical compounds in the smoke not causing harm? The doctor's oath is, first, do no harm. Two, if people who were already breaking the law using an illicit drug for 17 years before the system allowed this pseudo-legal use, do they have the credibility to allow us to believe this actually helps?
If you were nauseous, in chronic pain, spastic, prone to seizures, or were losing your eyesight to glaucoma, and you smoked a joint 17 years ago and found it helped you medically, would you choose to live in misery for another 17 years until it became legal to use, just so you could have some credibility in John English's view? You can read more of my responses to John English in the comments section of his articles, which are hyperlinked from stash.normal.org. Feel free to leave some of your own comments, too. NormalCon 2009, Yes We Cannabis, September 24th through 26th, 2009, in San Francisco, California.
The war on drugs has been an utter failure, and I think that we need to rethink and decriminalize our marijuana laws.
President Obama was right in 2004, and 5 years later, the American people agree.
As regards to legalization, it's not in the president's vocabulary, and it's not in mine.
We're working hard to make sure legalization is in the drug czar's vocabulary.
Whether legalizing marijuana would improve the economy, the answer is no, I don't think that is a good strategy.
There's nothing funny about legalization, Mr. President. Registration, sponsorships, and vending information is available at norml.org or by calling 888-67-NORMAL. The effects of marijuana prohibition are felt by all Americans in every walk of life, regardless of race, creed, color, religion, party politics, social status, wealth, gender, sexual orientation, or even one's use or non-use of marijuana. As the Marijuana Smokers Lobby, Normal hears the stories of these average Americans and brings them to the attention of our policymakers and our fellow citizens in this segment we call Normal Newsmakers. One of the things I like to do here at the Normal Daily Audio Stash is bring together all the folks in the cannabis community who are working so hard to bring about an end to adult marijuana prohibition. There's a lot of us out there. There's a ton of websites, a ton of organizations, and a whole bunch of really good podcasts out there where you can get some information. And joining us here now to talk about one such podcast is Casper Leach, the podcaster behind Time for Hemp. And Casper, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. This is a great opportunity to raise our voice together and let everybody know how important it is to start using this plant for paper, fiber, fuel, and medications.
You betcha. And, you know, I want to thank you personally. You know, I'm standing on the shoulders of giants like you and Dean Becker at the Drug Truth Network and a bunch of other folks who kind of pioneered this idea of blogging and podcasting about the drug war. So, tell us how long you've been involved with Time for Hemp.
Well, actually, Time for Hemp began in 1991. We were, busy putting together a thing called the California Hemp Initiative. When I say we, I'm talking about Jack Hare and Dennis Perrone and Dr. Todd McAree and Chris and Lynn Osborne and Chris Conrad and Judy Osborne. A lot of great people back there working to make a difference in California. And our biggest problem was getting our message out. People thought we were just a bunch of stoned out hippies trying to re-legalize it so we could just get high. And it was hard to tell people the truth about paper, fiber, fuel, and medications, as we mentioned at the top of the show. And I said, why don't I put together a community cable access program? And once the program airs through community cable access, it becomes public domain. We can take sound bites from that, use it in our radio and television ads. We were up against Partnership for a Drug-Free America and a few other organizations that had a huge treasure chest to advertise with. And of course, being the marijuana movement, our coffers didn't have much money in them. So this was an ideal way of getting our message out. It was my job as a host to play stupid and say, oh, you really can make paper out of marijuana? No.
Really?
I'd give Jack Hare a chance to soapbox or Chris Conrad a chance to soapbox, and then we would cut out a little soundbite and use it in advertising. And when activists back across the United States heard what we were doing, they were enthusiastic. And community cable had a policy that if you lived in that community and you even wanted to have your family videos from a birthday party shown, it was community cable access. It was required to do so. So people got copies of Time for Hemp and insisted that their programming included it in their area. And because of that, Time for Hemp became the very first community cable access show to ever debut in 19 states and 23 cities. And then it became the first to go national in a three-week period of time. And in a total of six weeks, we were international. We were being seen in Canada and Australia and Amsterdam as well as 103 cities in America. So people want to hear the truth. And when they start hearing it, they want to share it with their friends, and that's the important thing. We are always trying to let everybody know the truth about this wonderful plant.
Oh, and you're doing such a good job of it, too. Let's let everyone know where they can get Time for Hemp on the web and elsewhere.
Oh, yeah, please don't do T-I-M-E-F-O-R-H-E-M-P. That's not it. The number four, time4hemp.com. And when you go there, we've got a couple of podcasts now. Time for Hemp was the first television series, and it lasted about a year. But, you know, the broadcasting companies across America like to do a thing called censorship, and no one wanted to broadcast these remarkable interviews with these great guests that was out there. So when the Internet came along, we were able to post up all the interviews that we did for Time for Hemp at time4hemp.com in 1990. It became the first website to have, one of the first websites to offer free video downloads on the Internet. And then in 2007, at the encouragement of a handful of friends, I began doing what they now call podcasting. And my first guest on the show was Alan St. Pierre on the Time for Hemp Talking Heads show. We called it Time for Hemp Today. We were doing What's Happening Now in the Classics. from the television series was being released in the Time for Hemp Classic RSS feed. And much to my surprise, and the surprise of my webmaster, Time for Hemp Classic and Time for Hemp Today quickly climbed into the rankings of iTunes. And now when you type the word hemp into the iTunes search engine, Time for Hemp is the number one and the number two recommended podcast globally. So it's quite an honor, and it's because of all the wonderful guests that we have and the fact that our audience loves our guests enough to share them with all their friends. So thank you to everybody who's helped make that happen.
Yeah, that's part of what's making this this marijuana movement take off, is everybody's willingness to share and cooperate in getting the message out. It seems like we all realize the truth here, and it's like an itch. You just can't stand to not tell people the truth about marijuana.
No, you can't. It's like a Plato's cave. Once you learn what the animals really are, you go back and tell all your friends and they stone you, they don't believe it, but hey, truth is truth. And that's what I like about Time for Hemp as well, is that you get the truth from the horse's mouth. If you want to hear what Jack Hare had to say and how he learned about marijuana being used for paper, fiber, fuel, and medications, and how he unearthed the historic documentation that he put together in his book, we have the interview. If you want to learn how Mark Emery is fighting the United States government for extradition and how he's not going to be surrendering himself, we have the interview. If you want to hear how Dr. Timothy Leary got involved and became the father of the LSD movement, hey, I got the interview. And same with Congressman Barney Frank and Willie Nelson and Alan St. Pierre and Keith Stroff and Ethan Nadelman. You know, these people have so much to say that as an audience member, which is how I look at myself when I'm done with these shows, it's amazing what you learn. It's like a huge classroom about freedom. It's like a huge classroom about the plant, about horticulture, about humanity. So I'm just amazed at my guests. They make the programming fantastic.
I agree. And Casper, how about yourself, your own personal background? What led you to the cannabis movement?
Jack Hare.
Yeah, just Jack.
I want to drop kick him sometimes because it's totally raped my life being involved in the marijuana movement. It's taken all of my time, energy, and resources. I was working in California at a science supply shop. Jack Hare had just put together a book called The Emperor Wears No Clothes. It was his third or fourth volume of it. Some guy named Ed Rosenthal, who had this really stony article appearing every month in this wild magazine called High Times, which, you know, back then was kind of cutting edge, was helping to underwrite the cost of it. And they were having a big party, and Jack liked my customer service so much that he invited me to the book signing party. He said even the editors of High Times were going to be there. And I thought, that's nice. This is Hollywood. I met a lot of people. I hear a lot of stories. That's nice. I didn't go. And Jack called a couple times to see how his signs were going. Every time he dealt with me on the phone, and he asked me to come out to see what he was doing. I had no interest. He finally got me to come out and see what he was doing. He talked me into working for him. He hired me on to run his office while he went on the road to talk to colleges and to speak at rallies at HempFest. It was my job to handle the media back in L.A., to get his books out, his T-shirts out, and to be him at different organizations to represent the hemp movement. And because of that, I learned the importance of turning this plant into a viable product for our farmers to grow and use. Because of that, I learned the necessity for our patients in America to be given the opportunity to use medical marijuana. Because of that, I began to learn the horrible, horrible things that happen to people when they go through our law system, and how they are raped of their rights, and how they are stripped of their economics, and how their families are destroyed and torn apart because of these horrible laws. And it was just impossible to stand along the sidelines anymore and be quiet and not do anything. So Jack Hare made me promise to dedicate my life to re-legalizing marijuana until it was re-legalized, or until they put me in a coffin and threw dirt upon me and grew a marijuana plant on top of
it. Yeah, that sounds like Jack, all right. Now, Casper, you've got, you know, a huge library, archive of all these, you know, luminaries in the marijuana movement and people that you've interviewed. Are there any interviews you haven't got or would like to get that you haven't gotten yet?
Honestly, The new drugs are, and the new attorney general. I contacted their office, and I was told if I put together a proper request that there'd be a good chance that I would be able to land those interviews. But here's something that I can't believe happened. I've been so busy, so really busy doing the tribute to the American Marijuana Awards here recently. We just had a two-year anniversary celebration that I put a show together for. I've had some great guests suddenly pop up. Eddie Lepp is going off to jail here on July 10th.
Right. Yeah.
And he's wanting to talk to the audience at Time for Hemp. We now have over 260,000 people, and we're growing daily. And so how do you tell Eddie Lepp no? Mark Emery's getting ready to go behind bars. He wanted to express his love to the marijuana movement and thought that the Time for Hemp podcast would be an avenue to do so. So I would rather embrace these people and spend my time right now with my microphone and my music and giving this message to my audience. But eventually, those people, I'm hoping to get on the show. It's funny that you should ask.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, they're all great interviews, and we hope to hear them on your show. Time for Hemp, Time Number 4 Hemp, if you're looking for it on the internet or iTunes. And Casper Leach is the host of the show. And before we let you go, anything else you want to say to our listeners here at the Stash?
Oh, absolutely. Now, we got a lot of good music in all of our shows. I don't want you to think that you're just tuning in for a Talking Heads presentation. Now, here's the deal. We got two podcasts now. Time for Hemp Classic. We only had like about 40 shows from 1991, and nothing new went up on the classic feeds, and it was getting stale. So what I did was I turned it into Time for Hemp Music. And we have Coke and Tam at the MarijuanaMusicAwards.com committee, who sends a lot of wonderful music our way. And so we do that. And on the Time for Hemp Talking Head Show, which is the Time for Hemp Today podcast, we talk about 10 minutes and play some really cool music. Talk about 10 minutes, like we play rock and roll, headbanger, reggae, rap, old school, new school, big name, little name. So please, there's a lot of great music, a lot of talent on the show, and there's a lot of things to learn, a lot of great information. And if you just tell your friends time4hemp.com, the world can only just finally learn the truth, and maybe we will end this war on drugs.
Oh, we will. Thank you, Casper, for doing what you do at Time for Hemp. And thank you, Casper, for joining us here on the Daily Audio Stash.
And remember, the next time you hear me, you'll know that it's Time for Hemp.
The battle to end adult marijuana prohibition can sometimes seem endlessly frustrating and impossible to overcome. One way we bond as a community and draw strength to continue is by rejuvenating our spirit through art and music. The Marijuana Music Awards exist to recognize those sonic artists in all genres of music who feature a ganja-friendly message to motivate and inspire all the cannabis community. Our Daily Toker Tunes, brought to you by MarijuanaMusicAwards.com, feature the finest in blues, rock, jazz, hip-hop, rap, reggae, country, bluegrass, and dance music, to enhance that 420 feeling and refresh all you stashers for another day on the front lines of the drug war. Enjoy this cut from MarijuanaMusicAwards.com and visit our blog at stash.normal.org to learn how you can vote for your favorites and enter your toker tunes in the 2009 Marijuana Music Awards. This Reggae Wednesday, we hear from 2009 American MMA Double Award winner, Sifari. Sifari won Best Spiritual Song with today's toker tune, Peaceful Village, and Best Dub with Mary Jane Dub, following his success in 2008 with Best Reggae Song. Sifari, based in Ohio, is an international reggae recording artist. You can grab his new CD at myspace.com/Sifari. That's S-E-E-F-A-R-I. The CD features MMA award-winning songs, several top 10 radio hits, including the number one hit Roots Man, plus popular songs including Rasta Italist, which is currently number 8 in Australia. And registered stashers, you can get an MP3 download of this tune, the 2009 American Marijuana Music Awards Best Spiritual Song, Peaceful Village, by Sifari. Thank you.
Rasta is the peace chief of the peaceful village. Yeah.
considered medical marijuana? Double-blind, peer-reviewed studies have found cannabinoid therapies to be successful in treating the symptoms of Alzheimer's disease, ALS or Lou Gehrig's disease, brain cancers, chronic pain, diabetes mellitus, dystonia, fibromyalgia, GI disorders, hepatitis C, HIV/AIDS, hypertension, incontinence, MRSA, multiple sclerosis, osteoporosis, pruritus, rheumatoid arthritis, sleep apnea, and Tourette's syndrome, as well as anecdotal evidence suggesting relief from anxiety, depression, and post-traumatic stress, plus reduction in the need for narcotic painkillers. Side effects of medical marijuana can include euphoria, relaxation, anxiety, panic reactions, paranoia, tachycardia, dry eyes, dry mouth, concentration and reaction time impairment, appetite increase, and in 37 states, arrest and incarceration. But medical marijuana is non-toxic and cannot cause overdose. Medical marijuana. It's not for everyone, but ask your doctor if medical marijuana may be right for you. A sweet California sunshine.
Marijuana.
Exhibit A.
This is the California Marijuana Report for the week of July 6, 2009. I'm Eric Brenner. This week, a few minutes with Dennis Perrone, the one-time Republican candidate for governor, opens up about Eddie Lepp, camp, and marijuana legalization. We'll also check in with John Lee Hooker and Carlos Santana for a California marijuana music segment only on the California Marijuana Report. As Eddie Lepp begins a new life in federal prison, marijuana activists continue to rally for legalization. One such figure is the legendary San Franciscan Dennis Perrone, who joins us today on the California Marijuana Report. Dennis, thanks for joining us today. Talk to me about your final hours with Eddie Lepp.
It's very sad because he got 10 years. And, you know, the guy is 57 years old. And I think in 10 years, 67... That's always a life sentence for Eddie. And, yeah, he's going to Long Park, and that's supposed to be nice in 10 years. And for me, it was very sad, because I thought, here's this waste of life. They're paying for this, gotta be incarcerated. He's such a good and gentle soul. Very sad, but he also, I feel like he is the last one gonna be dying in a war. And it's sad that someone has to be the last one, but because they die, maybe the world's got a better place. And that, metaphorically speaking, Eddie's not dying, 10 years, but he may be the spark to change this whole round. They have to use his suffering to change this thing around, give it a face, see the total injustice. And, you know, it still hurts my heart to see all this pain and war around me after all my mission was has been to get peace.
Eddie was facing a life sentence, 35,000 marijuana plants that were seized on his property. He would not cop to any of their accusations, the government. What are your feelings on the way he handled his defense?
Well, you know, he could have handled better and not have done this time. I know it could have been. In a way, pride is kind of false pride. You know, pride is always a hyphenated word. In his case, it was like kind of false pride because, yes, you know, sometimes we do exaggerate the truth. That doesn't mean we're lying. And sometimes we omit certain things. That doesn't mean we're lying either. But we're trying to make our argument better. Everyone else is trying to make their argument better. And Eddie was saying that he didn't actually physically work on the farm. Oh, I understand that. He's got a bad back. And I'm sure at the same time, he organized a group of people to try to change the world. And he had no intention of ever harvesting them. Yeah, it was a freedom of speech, and it had nothing to do with the marijuana going to be harvested and any of us going to make $1 billion. No. They were going to give away the marijuana and ruin the market and crash the marijuana market. So there's a lot of people that don't want that. Leaving out just none of the DEA, because let's get real. It's a job for them. But there's growers, too, that are very happy with status quo, and dealers, and, you know, everyone right on down the line. It's it's kind of discouraging when you look at the enemy and you find out it's your friend. You know, so we were all complicit too. We all paid $65 an eighth, $50 an eighth. We bought into the system.
Eddie reported to prison today. What time was he due to arrive?
He was going to arrive. He left last night at 3 o'clock in the morning. It's a 6-hour trip to SLO. He's going to turn himself in at 9. I know, it's 12 o'clock. And whole caravans of guards. They were caravaning with, about 10 cars all the way down to Lompoc. It's kind of sad because I felt like I was saying goodbye. And, he was not going to be around for 10 years. He's not that good of help. And, it's 10 years, even if your pampered life would be, anybody would give anything for 10 years. I'd give anything for 10 years.
Dennis, the federal judge, Marilyn Patel.
She's the worst.
She claimed in court that day the law required such an incredible sentence.
It's called the mandatory minimum. They've been trying to change that for a long time. Certain judges have strayed from it. In that Rosenthal's case, the judge gave him 1 day. Ed Rosenthal was convicted of selling whatever.
Growing more than 1,000 plants.
Yeah, well, but he was almost like Kingpin, too. But he gets 1 day, and Eddie gets 10 years. And Eddie wasn't a good PR man. Eddie didn't explain to the people what he was doing. But that, there was a confusion around it. And they thought they could pick on Eddie because he didn't state, what he was exactly doing. He was exercising his free speech that the feds and the state are in collusion. They're in conflict. And what is going to win? The state free speech or the federal free speech? And he was just exercising his right to free speech. He had no intention of ever harvesting 28,000 plants. No intention of having scales to sell it. He didn't have any warehouses to store it. He didn't have any scissors to trim it. He hardly had any people, to actually pull the plants. They hand out years, like we talk about days.
It's very sick. It's very sad. And when you say years, there is no parole in the federal prison system, and there are no conjugal visits, ruining people's lives, tearing families apart, all for growing plants. And Dennis, that's what I need to ask you. There were 35,000 plants, according to the federal prosecutors, David Hall, who took down Eddie Lapp, helped send him away for over 10 years. People are saying, that was 35,000 plants. That's different. Why is it different? I don't care if there were 90,000 plants. Does that make a difference to you, the plants?
It doesn't make any difference to me. It doesn't make any difference to anybody. They know that they know about marijuana. They know it's medicine. The 100 of them, 10,000 of them, 20,000 doesn't matter. It's the same medicine that they've been used for centuries to heal people. And they're so caught up in, how much you had, whether you're a dealer or a user. Users and dealers are the same people. We know that, but I don't think that thought is lost on these people. They don't get it. It's not marijuana they don't like. It's the people that smoke marijuana. That's who they don't like. And that has nothing to do with marijuana, I assure you that. It has to do with the people that smoke it. And that is, when you touch on that one, you'll find that is control of all the people that they don't like. And if that's the marijuana, they know. They need to smoke marijuana. They tried it. They all.
I just can't understand why we're talking about plants. This is what we're talking about. Plants.
It's a weed, and they brag about how many they pull up every year. And of course, the millions. They have Philly helicopter flying in the air, 24/7. 20 stupid people in them are ready to jump down at any minute for a plant.
In our remaining few minutes here, Dennis, camp up and running again this year, fully funded by the state. In the last 2 weeks alone, according to the Santa Rosa Press-Democrat, they have seized 97,000 plants in Mendocino County.
I wonder what they say that is a percentage. What percentage of the plants it is? 97,000 is a waste of time. It's all a waste of time, a waste of money, taxpayers' money, and 97,000 plants. It drives up the price of pot, which, quite frankly, is like that. And you know who's in on it? The county assessor. I mean, everyone's in on it. The county assessor, those bunch of rocks in Mendocino County are no worth $1,000 a pound or $4,000 a pound. I'm not going to get any tax base out of them. We're going to lose our tax base. So everybody's in on it, of keeping the prices high. The 97,000 is a drop in the bucket, but it's the psychology of that. This is illegal. This is accused of raising prices. I could have got busted. And when they bust these plants, they bust the plant. They don't even bust the person. They busted the plant. This is like insanity. It's laughable, but I think that we'll look back on this time in history, and we will chuckle and laugh. I'm so discouraged at the federal level. Because I think about it, California is always going to be this liberal, cool place. that doesn't mean Iowa's going to be that liberal, cool place. And they can be who they are. They can be big farmers and not smoke pot. They can drink liquor. We don't care. We're for it. That's what they want. But I realize that this country, if it's united in anything, it's not united enough on the marijuana laws. And what may look good in Iowa doesn't look good here. And it discourages me. I think we should have to break up the federal government. Just don't keep seeing the Congress get moving. And it's like the liberals have joined the KKK in the drug policy. They both agree on drug regulation. And these people are going to regulate everything to death. And they're never going to legalize marijuana. But they just don't see them happening. I think we're going to have to take a judge and say, you know, Prop 215, marijuana, and the proponent that is drug said all use is medical. Therefore, if that's true, they're just going to legalize marijuana in 1996. End of story, kill off the dogs. And that will pass. That will happen. And I'm not sure when. I just hope I'm there because I'm going to gloat. To see these guys suffer at the unemployment rate in line. They've just been thugs and bullies and pissed me off so much that every morning I wake up and I gotta legalize marijuana. I am driven to saving this country and ending this war.
Dennis Caron, thank you so much for joining us today on the California Marijuana Report.
Okay, thank you, Eric.
Let's welcome Mr. Richie Haven.
Guitar of Mike, please. Guitar Mike.
Now some California marijuana music. This week we're in the San Francisco Bay Area with blues rock icon John Lee Hooker. In 1989, Hooker released The Healer with Carlos Santana playing lead guitar. John Lee Hooker and Carlos Santana are California rock legends, only on the California Marijuana Report.
Yeah.
woman left me. The blues healed me. My woman left me early one morning. The blues healed me, healed me, healed me. Yeah, yeah. Long, 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 long. The blues, the blues. Blue blues, the healing healer.
This has been the California Marijuana Report for the week of July 6, 2009. Special thanks to Dennis Perrone, John Lee Hooker, Carlos Santana, Quicksilver Messenger Service, Buzzy Linhart, Jordan Greenberg, and of course Normal, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Join our global group on Facebook. I'm Eric Brenner for the California Marijuana Report.
A sweet California sunshine. Have a mother hen.
Thank you for downloading the Normal Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. We are produced by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. Our executive producer is Alan St. Pierre. Our deputy director is Paul Armentano. Our webmaster is Brian Judy. And web production is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. As always, you can catch up on the latest information about marijuana at www.norml.org. And you can interact and download from our audio stash blog at stash.normal.org.
For everyone here at Normal, I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, hoping all your harvests are bountiful and your encounters with law enforcement are non-existent. We leave you today with a reminder to check out the Normal calendar of events, which you can now find under the Simple URL, norml.org/calendar. On there, you will find the events that are happening at the national Normal level, as well as events being promoted by our local regional chapters, at least those of whom who have added their calendar to the Normal calendar. So, chapter leaders out there, send me an email at stash@normal.org so we can get your events on the national Normal calendar. Tomorrow's Stash features our visit with Terry Joyce in the Southern California scene, as well as an interview with Marijuana Policy Project's Bruce Merkin on the recent ad they've tried to get shown in California. Thanks for downloading the podcast, and we'll be back tomorrow with more news and interviews you can use for the cannabis community. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.